Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hill, author, natural health expert, producer extraordinaire. We also have Will Hottie Patati Schmidt coming to us. We're from the Bay Area. I'm actually really not here, so the show's probably not going to be that great today. This was pre-recorded, so I'm sorry if you have to sit through all this without me.
Thank you, Kenna, who is not here, and we are back. I'm here with Will Hottie Patati Schmidt. He's in another land.
Feels a little weird for you to say
right?
that.
It just doesn't work out, but I mean, I don't even know what else your name is anymore.
Yeah, right. At this point.
I was sending you some information in the actual mail last week, and that's what it was. That's what went on the envelope. I couldn't remember what your actual name was.
Todd?
Yeah. All right, so we're here for part two of our enzymes episode. So if you haven't listened to part one, you're doing it wrong. Go back and listen to part one. So you can find all of our episodes on kickitnaturally.com and just go to the search box and put in enzymes and you'll find part one there too. And we talked a lot about the digestive process and how enzymes work in that. But we're going to get into some other parts of enzymes as well and other uses of enzymes as well as finishing up some other questions. We left off part of Virginia's question last week. How stupid was that?
Yeah, which was it near the end? I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it was the part. It was of a specific times of day. Blah 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 blah.
Oh yeah, okay.
Let's start with that, and then we have some more questions to hit.
Sure. So let's see. I want to catch all of it. So she was asking a bunch of different questions, and I'll just reread some of them. What you have to get, from food, and whether conventional produce has any enzymes we covered last week. What you need to get from a bottle and what things you should be looking for when you're trying to purchase enzymes and what things you should avoid. What conditions can be helped or hurt from lack of enzymes or taking too many enzymes? We touch on that. Whether specific vitamins can make them more or less effective? Good question. And whether we covered whether diabetics have special needs for them. And then the last question she had was, are there specific times of day you should take them? With food, between meals, at bedtime, with specific vitamins, and that's all.
Okay.
So, yeah, we talked a bit about them being helpful. They are active agents that facilitate digestion. So taking them with digestion is when you're taking digestive enzymes, that is a smart move.
Yeah, and there are some people who feel like, you know, the stomach acid is going to destroy, and some people that feel like, well, they're just not activated in that acidic environment, and once they leave the stomach into the alkaline environment, they become reactivated again. So, you know, there's a lot of fine lines that you could kind of figure out with this, and some people are like, you know, you really should take it 30 minutes before you eat, or you know, after the food has moved out of the stomach. But we find that if you just take it around where you're going to be eating when you're taking digestive enzymes, that it seems to benefit your digestion and it seems to work out. We do like to see people, generally speaking, use a broad spectrum digestive enzyme when they're working to do digestion.
Mm-hmm.
That we hear all that clickety-clackety when you type, Will.
Oh, yeah, I was just typing in the search box about whether lipase was damaged by acid or not. And it's interesting to see that people just think that the stomach acid will for sure destroy those enzymes. But in reality, like you said, a lot of them are just not active at certain ranges. So
right. So, you know, when you're looking to what should I use for my digestive enzymes, and that was one of Virginia's questions there, we like to see people use a broad spectrum because there are plant-based digestive enzymes and there are animal-based digestive enzymes, and it does seem that the plant-based ones are damaged less by that acid. That seems to be a widely accepted opinion. But we like to see people have the ability to get both when needed. So let's talk a little bit about the different enzymes that we use for different reasons. And, you know, as long as you're getting a quality enzyme, you're usually doing okay if it has a wide spectrum of different types of enzymes in it. Don't get the cheapest enzyme you can find. Most, you know, don't go to your local drugstore to buy enzymes. You're going to buy a very low quality product in most cases in that scenario. And we just don't recommend that. You want things that can actually be used by the body. A lot of the cheaper enzymes have all these binders, or the cheaper supplements out there have all these binders that don't even allow your body to access whatever it was you just took, and can even restrict your ability to assimilate nutrients from the food you're eating. So try to avoid the cheap stuff when you're looking. But we use one a lot that's called Omnizyme. These are from Empirical Labs. And this is a broad-based plant-based enzyme. Another one that we use is Intazyme, which is a mixture of those plant-based and some animal-based enzymes like the pancreatic enzymes and such. So one that we really talk about the most is Digestizyme. And what this is basically a broad-based digestive enzyme that also includes a little bit of stomach acidifiers, like a little bit of HCL, a little bit of apple cider vinegar powder. But it includes like zinc and some other cofactors that your body needs to make its own HCL more effectively. So we like to use this enzyme just because if someone has to supplement with HCL and improve their HCL production, using this particular supplement gives their bodies more cofactors that it needs to start making more of its own HCL so that the person can then reduce the amount of HCL that they're supplementing with a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm. And another supplement enzyme that we mention a lot of the times is lactase. And there is a small amount of lactase in, I think, most of those that you just mentioned. But as we said before, when we talked about lactose intolerance, like, sometimes people really need to take a very significant amount of lactase, and then they're free to eat dairy products again. So if you're having issues with dairy, you might want to experiment with, I think you say, one you often recommend is called Milk Jest, is that
Milk
correct?
Milk Jest, yeah. Daily makes it, I believe. But that seems to be the one that we see the best results with. And we do have a whole episode on lactose intolerance that you can listen to some of the other issues that could be a factor as well. But we find that if someone is having a problem because it's a deficiency of that particular enzyme, using a small amount of it doesn't seem to help much. But if you use a capsule like that Milk Jest that has a higher dose, it does seem to be more effective. So that's another enzyme that we use a lot. And finally, another one is called PNL, which is it has a higher dose of the lipase enzyme that is better for processing fats, and then the protease that helps with the protein. So if someone's missing their gallbladder and is not processing fats well, sometimes that can be an effective enzyme to use in that regard. But I think it's one of our more advanced ones that's sold on Natural Reference, and you can only get it with the help of a coach. It's not available to the public like most of the other enzymes are.
And some of the other sort of kind of fun natural enzymes that we can take advantage of, I think we have one in our cookbook, which we hope to get out eventually, is a steak that has a papaya wrap in it. So papaya, it's like a papaya marinade. And papaya has papain in it, which helps break down muscle tissue like that found in steak and different meats. So you can make a marinade with raw papaya, sort of like blend it up so it turns into like a marinade consistency. And you can soak or marinate the meat in that for like a day beforehand, and it'll help make those proteins in the meats more bioavailable. And another trick that we use is to actually use different bacteria to help break down our foods, like when we add apple cider vinegar to soups, when we make like bone broth soups and we'll pour some apple cider vinegar in them. Those little guys will help catalyze the breakdown of the different proteins present in the connective tissues, so it can help free up the collagen that we're trying to get out of the meats that we're soaking.
Okay, and Virginia, we're going to talk about a little bit later in this episode when you might take enzymes away from meal, away from a meal as far as a systemic type stuff. But let's go to Jackie's question. I think we're...
Sure. Jackie asks, what are the different kinds of enzymes? How much should we be taking, and for how long should we be taking them?
So one thing that we talk about sometimes is how anybody who's eating cooked food should be using digestive enzymes pretty much indefinitely. Like a lot of the things that we use to improve digestion, especially like HCL capsules, may be a temporary situation until you can help your body make its own HCL. But if you're eating cooked food, you should be using some type of digestive enzymes, at least some of the time, just so that you're not, over the long term, stripping your body of all of its enzyme reserves. So as far as how much you should take, we talked a little bit last week how most people in most cases benefit just by taking enough to digest their food, which is going to be one or two capsules per meal, and not going a whole lot more than that, because you don't want to promote tissue breakdown if you're already leaning a little bit towards that direction. You don't want to further facilitate that by providing more enzymes that can magnify the ability to do that. So that's one way to look at that. But as far as she says, how long, it's kind of an indefinite thing. That's one of the only things that we look at, like, look, we're always going to kind of do this unless you have the ability to grow your own food and you're, you know, eating so much high quality, good, raw, uncooked stuff that you're getting plenty of enzymes in that way. So it's just an easy step that can really improve a lot of situations. And we kind of view it as, why not just do that? It's not something that after you've been using it for a while that you have to use every single meal. But if you can use it occasionally, you're going to get the boost from that.
Yeah. And you, like we talked about earlier also, you may find that your need for them diminishes a bit the better you get your digestive system fundamental aspects working. Like the better your stomach acid is performing, the better your bile is flowing, the more effective your pancreatic bicarbonate secretion is, then it creates the right pHs that creates the environment the enzymes need to be their most effective.
Let's look at an example of that. So let's say someone, if we're still pretending that you're Kenna from last week and that you had chronic diarrhea, let's talk about your diarrhea again.
Sure.
Okay, well, so... So, but if someone has chronic diarrhea, in a lot of cases, the bile is not neutralizing the acid that's coming from the stomach, so that acid is kind of screaming through the system. So in that scenario, the small intestine is not moving towards that alkaline pH where a lot of those digestive enzymes can be activated and fulfill their function. So a person like that, when they fix that problem, all of a sudden the enzymes that they are getting or the enzymes that their body is making all of a sudden start to function correctly, and you get this huge boost. So it might not be just adding enzymes to your diet through supplements that improve situations. You can improve things that are not functioning correctly and improve the function of the enzymes that you have access to already.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Let's go to Debbie.
Cool. Debbie says, are there foods besides raw veggies and fruits that can enhance the making of enzymes? Are there foods or other things that we are unknowingly doing to break them down? Also, what about gut enzymes like incretins and DPP4s? Do they play a part in anything? In particular, I'm asking about weight management. One last question, your thoughts on using enzymes for inflammation away from meals.
Okay, so real quick, Will, if you don't, do you happen to know anything about the incretins?
No.
Okay, so basically this is something, it's just a new thing that people are looking into, and the incretins are actually more like hormones, but they're affected by different enzymes, and they're either turned on or turned off by different enzymes. So people are starting to mess with that a little bit to see if it can affect the way that the body produces insulin or the effectiveness of that insulin. And I don't know enough about that. It seems like something else that people are trying to do to avoid having to just eat better food. So it's not something that I have been interested in enough to want to research more. So we won't get into that one. So my answer to that one is, I don't know. So let's look at Debbie's other questions here, Will.
Yeah. So one thing that I want to kind of point out is the role that hormones and our autonomic nervous system plays in this whole game. Where when we eat food, our digestive system gets all these triggers from the entry of the molecules of the food, as well, of what kinds they are, as well as the other base chemicals like the stomach acid and the bile that triggers the different hormones to be secreted from the digestive organs. And that's all well and good, but if the body is in a fight or flight state or the sympathetic nervous system state, there's some override activity that the nervous system can play that can deprioritize the digestive organ function and reprioritize energy and operations towards the addressing the emergency or the apparent emergency. So things that we can do to facilitate digestion also relate very much to balancing our nervous system. So it may seem like an oddball woo-woo suggestion, but in a very direct way, something like meditation or breathing practices could very much help your body get into a more relaxed state where it could prioritize digestion, and that could support the digestive organ function and secretion of their various enzymes and chemicals.
You know, I think it's important to look at that too, because, and let's look at beyond just the, you need to meditate to get it. Think about the people that are walking around stressed all the time. And, you know, when you look at that sympathetic state that is a function of the body that is there for a purpose, it's there to elevate the body's ability to function in a stress situation, like a lion is chasing them. A lot of the functions in the body change in that state to help you run away from the lion. So in that state, digestion is deprioritized. It's not as important when you're running away from a lion. But when you're a person who feels that stressed state all the time because you're late for work and your boss yelled at you and you only have $8 for this $700 bill, all that stuff in your life is changing the way that your body is functioning. So when that's, not only are you deprioritizing the digestive function, but everything that goes with that, along with that, which could include the production of enzymes that help improve that digestive process. So doing those things like Will was saying can make a lot of things go right and can be a big part of this digestive puzzle for some people.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a health, fitness, or nutrition professional, check out our other podcast, Six Figure Health Pro. We dig into the latest marketing techniques and business growing strategies for health professionals. To learn how to take your business to the next level, search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. Now do what you're told.
Yeah, as far as other foods that can help break down, like some foods are kind of well known for that capacity, like papayas, as I mentioned earlier. But also some consumption of probiotic-rich foods can help, because those bacteria also make enzymes that help us break down different foods, like lactose, for example. But the main thing that I think people can usually get their most bang for their buck out of is making sure that the environment is right for the enzymes to work. So having enough stomach acid, having good bile flow, having your nervous system be balanced, and also the having your intestinal tract be healthy and clean and clear. So you want certain types of bacteria to be present in your gut, and then you also don't want other types that create a lot of exotoxins, and those exotoxins can alter the pH of the internal environment and render the enzymes that you consume ineffective.
Right, so, and that's when you're talking about when Debbie's asking, like, are there other things that we're doing that would unknowingly be breaking them down? It's not that some of these things are breaking them down. It's just restricting their ability to function the way that they're supposed to function. They're supposed to be, you know, they're supposed to fit into the molecules and all these things like a puzzle piece and these different factors. And but if they can't be even be activated or turned on correctly, none of that stuff happens. So it's not always just about are they available or are they being produced correctly. Sometimes it's about can they function in the environment that they're in. And her final question with the about taking them enzymes for inflammation away from meals, let's go to Susan's question and we'll talk about that. We'll answer the rest of Debbie's question with that one.
Yeah, sure. So Susan asked, digestive enzymes had helped me so much from hypoglycemia to allergies and more if chosen carefully. I have experimented with cold and warmth producing enzymes. So what is the biochemistry behind why some make one feel cold and others make one feel hot? When we buy them, does it matter how they were made? I love the ones made from mold. They make me feel great. Also, in cancer patients, they use high pancreatic enzymes. What is the science behind it? Last, what are the best enzymes to dissolve calcifications?
Okay, so as far as the feeling warm or feeling cold thing, I've never heard of enzymes doing that. Maybe you have something that I don't have, Will. But one thing to think about is that a lot of times when someone doesn't have all the resources they need to digest correctly, the body will be pulling everything it can to help that digestion. Like maybe it's pulling all the chloride out of the body to help make more hydrochloric acid. And when that's the case, a person could end up feeling a little more cold. So if you were using an enzyme that was restricting or reducing the body's need to do that, to pull all the resources in, then maybe that would allow you to feel a little warmer. That's my only guess on that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Will?
Yeah, I think supporting metabolism in general is a really key thing to being able to maintain good body heat, make sure that your body has sufficient protein and stable blood sugar so that the thyroid can function the way it's supposed to and so that the cells can utilize glucose and the fats also. So they can, the brown fat tissue is very much responsible for production of heat, and having all of those cells have the fuel they need to do their jobs will help keep the body temperature up higher. And that's actually one marker that we use to look at thyroid function is body temperature. So when we see someone's body temperature kind of low, especially if we see the body temperature drop after a meal, as we talked about when we had Benedict Lerka on and we were focused on thyroid health, we can see that when that happens, when people's body temperature drops and pulse drops 20 to 30 minutes after a meal, that's a good indicator that their thyroid is slightly underactive and that their metabolic rate was being supported by stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline. So when that's the case, like the body can keep heat up, but it usually does so in a stress state. And when that's the case, oftentimes, even when someone's core temperature is sort of like artificially kept high through stress hormones, their extremities, like their hands and feet, are cold because their blood flow is shunted towards their larger organs.
You know, one interesting thing is I've seen some people out there that use digestive enzymes therapeutically to improve adrenal fatigue. And we've talked about adrenal fatigue a lot on episodes before, but we kind of view it as it's not always a situation of fixing the adrenal fatigue. It's about fixing what's going wrong that's making the body call on all of these hormonal activities to help boost whatever's not working correctly. And when you can fix what's not working correctly, the adrenals are not overworked and they come right back. So it kind of makes you see that, you know, when you're using enzymes to help improve adrenal fatigue, you may just be helping a lot of things work better so that the adrenals are not being called on as often as a backup support.
Totally. And for to kind of like flesh that out a little clearer through a metaphor, a lot of the times people will have something like back pain because their posture is bad and they think they need to strengthen their back. But if you touch their back muscles, you'll see they're like constantly contracted. And they have to be because their posture's off and those muscles are working to fight against gravity all the time. So doing exercises to like put more work and try to strengthen those muscles, all it does is make them tighter and even more active. And that's kind of the approach a lot of people take when they feel they have adrenal fatigue. They'll take like other enzymes and herbs and adaptogens to try to just boost their adrenal function. But already, like, the adrenals, they're just way overactive. And the solution isn't to like make them better at being overactive.
Right.
It's to relieve this, like, their, like, take some of the burden off of them by supporting the rest of the endocrine system, like the thyroid and just regular the mitochondria of the cells, so that they can make energy in the way that they're really designed for.
Okay, so let's take a break real quick. We'll let Kenna tell us something before we hit the rest of Susan's question.
Today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for all the details.
Cool. So one thing that Susan was mentioning was she was talking about using them for calcification. Mm. And that kind of goes hand in hand with what Debbie was asking about inflammation and using them systemically away from meals. And there are a lot of people that do this and that see a lot of success with this. There's one that we use a lot. Well, a lot of people for calcification issues are using natokinase. And what they'll do is they'll take these enzymes away from food. So that way these enzymes are not being used for the digestive process and can go into the system. And for a long time, we thought that as a medical health community, they thought that it was not possible for them to get through and get into the system. But now we see that there's a lot of proof that shows that they are. And now using these systemic enzymes away from meals is showing a lot of improvement to a lot of situations. But people will use natokinase to help break down different types of plaques, different types of things that are plugged up and calcifications. And we use one, we focus most on lumbrokinase. And the difference between those two is that natokinase is a single enzyme, where lumbrokinase is kind of a group of proteolytic enzymes. And the understanding is that they're good at going in and kind of breaking down these either calcifications or plaque formations, or people are even using different types of enzymes for cancer treatment, where they feel that it's going in and breaking down these problematic cells. And some people are seeing results. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm full on board with the cancer treatment thing, but I don't have a reason to be against it. Before we talk more about this, do you want to interject any here, Will?
I do. I want to point out a couple of things. We talked one episode about osteoporosis and errant or just inappropriate calcium metabolism, where we went kind of into the weeds a bit about cellular energy production and how when it's interfered with or when the cells are in an elevated stress state, that calcium gets pulled out of the bones and deposited into the soft tissues. Now, calcium is super critical electrolyte that is really, really essential to the process of like firing nerves and all sorts of muscle contraction. The heart depends on it. All muscles depend on it. Nerves depend on it. It fires off the neurons, and it's supposed to enter the cells, and then it's also supposed to get flushed back out of the cells. And there can be a problem when the cells are in a chronically activated, excited state that calcium can get deposited in those soft tissues and leached from the bones, making your hard tissues, like your bones, weaker and your soft tissues tougher. So you become less flexible and more fragile, which is what happens when people get old a lot of the time. As their metabolism declines, the calcium leaves where it should be and gets deposited where it shouldn't be. So in looking beyond just a particular enzyme to try to fix that, one of the main things that one of my favorite thinkers, Ray Pete, talks about is having sufficient carbon dioxide. This carbon dioxide is what helps pull the calcium back out of the soft tissues and go back to where it should be. And they found things like increased bone density in various animals and eggshells in chickens and different mammals that were fed or given carbonated water, as well as thyroid hormone supplementation. And that's because thyroid hormone helps your cells make energy, and in the process of making energy, you make more carbon dioxide, and carbon dioxide helps keep calcium in the right place. Carbonated water can also do that directly, but your cells, you don't have to, like, you don't need carbonated water as much if your thyroid is running right and your cells are making energy appropriately. But it is a cool little supplement. If it sounds like Susan's question is asking, what enzyme can I take to help support decalcification of soft tissues? And I would say, how about carbon dioxide?
And so, you know, carbonated water is a great one. And another thing that we've talked about in a lot of episodes is that you can increase your carbon dioxide load by improving your ability to process glucose correctly, because the CO2 will be a byproduct of properly processing glucose. And one way to look at this is you could look at your breath rate. Do you want to explain how a person can relate their breath rate to get a better understanding of, or at least an insight into how is that load working?
Absolutely, yeah. So in our almost free digestive issues course at kickitnaturally.com, we talk about different self-tests you can do to assess your own chemistry, and one of them is breath rate. And I love it. It's a really, really useful marker. I think that one self-test alone that takes literally 30 seconds to do is more insightful than those like 30-page metabolic typing questionnaires.
Right.
So when we look at breath rate, ideal breath rate is around 16 to 17 breaths per minute at rest. And that is indicative of a healthy cellular respiration. In cellular respiration, that's the way your cells take fuel like glucose and turn it into ATP or energy. Like, ATP is a molecule that your cells use for all sorts of things. In the process of making ATP, it also makes carbon dioxide. So there was, for example, carbon in the carbohydrate. Glucose is a carbohydrate. When it goes through cellular respiration, the carbon gets liberated and bound with oxygen, becoming carbon dioxide. So then you breathe that carbon back into the air. The more that you're creating energy through that process of cellular respiration, the more ATP you make, so the more energy you have, but also the more carbon dioxide you produce in the process. So when you're really good at that, or when you're doing that a lot, like say you're running and spending a lot of energy, you make a lot of carbon dioxide, so you end up exhaling more often, which is why you tend to breathe harder when you run or lift weights or something.
Right, and so, you know, when your breath rate is really slow, you know, like 8 or 9 or something like that, taking steps to improve that can do a lot of things. But I don't want you to hear what Will's just said and think that more is always better. If your breath rate is like 24, that doesn't mean you win, and you might actually be a little bit insane. So, yeah. You know, that's not always a good thing. You might be ripping through your fuel too quickly. But if checking your breath rate is one way to get an indication of where your CO2 levels are and how all that is working. So fixing that could help a lot of calcification issues. The one enzyme that we do use systemically, especially using in between meals, is called Vascuzyme, and it's only available through coaches, so it's not available to the public. You might have to work with a coach to be able to get it, but one of the main enzymes in it is lumbrokinase, which you may be able to find elsewhere by just getting that enzyme. So yeah, there are some benefits, and I'm on board with the people that are doing some of the work with systemically by using enzymes in between meals, as long as you're not going crazy with the proteolytic enzymes that are that can magnify the ability to break down tissue, because that can be problematic for a lot of people.
And just as a quick clarification, I don't mean that you should try to breathe faster if your breath rate is slow.
Right.
Your nervous system is controlling that, and it's regulating the amount of oxygen to carbon dioxide that's present in your bloodstream. So if you try to just breathe faster and get a better score, what you're going to do is blow out more of the CO2 faster than you're making it, and that's going to make things worse.
Yeah, and you might pass out.
Yeah, so instead, do the digestive issues course we have at kickitnaturally.com and learn about, if your breath rate's slow, learn about the fat burner or the slow oxidizer imbalance, and follow the steps we talk about of how to fix that, because it's about supporting cellular energy production at the cellular level.
All right, cool. So just to wrap up here a little bit, from this two-part episode, you know, digestive enzymes can be a really big help for a lot of people. But it doesn't mean that you need to pile on a bunch of them. A lot of the time, it's more about helping the body function correctly so that the enzymes that you do have access to already can operate the way that they're supposed to operate, help you pull all of the nutrition out of the food so your body can actually use that nutrition more than it is just taking a bunch of capsules. What else do you want to say to kind of wrap it all up, Will? Or to summarize?
Yeah, I think, again, like we talked about, just getting it so that your digestion, the fundamentals of the environment are really good, where you have enough stomach acid to help activate pepsin, you have good bile flow, you have good pancreatic bicarbonate secretions, so you have all the electrolytes that you need, and you have a healthy internal environment in your intestines. When those things are the case, then there will be the correct pHs present in the different zones of digestion, and that will really support the enzymes that your body's making. So it's totally fine to take digestive enzymes, but also know that if you don't correct the different chemical environments in the digestion, you could have all the pepsin in the world in your stomach, like all of it. Well, that probably wouldn't fit, but you could have all that would fit in there. But if it's not the right pH, it's not going to be able to be active and do its job. So those other things are just as important, if not even more important than making sure you supplement with enzymes.
Cool. And great question, Virginia. You guys keep sending in your questions so we can cover them on the show. And we'll see you guys next week.
If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. Or head on over to Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net. He's got some great exercise videos up and some stretches and articles and some yummy pictures of himself. So check it out.